History That Doesn't Suck is a legit, hard-hitting American history podcast told through entertaining stories. Join me, Professor Greg Jackson, for History That Doesn't Suck, an Odyssey podcast, available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's hour one of the G-Bag Nation here on 105.3 The Fan. Thanks for making us part of your day as we are off and running on our schedule release tailgate show with the big presentation coming up at 7 o'clock on NFL Network and ESPN. And of course, you can listen right along tonight. Fan After Dark with Fred and Blake. It is a perfect evening for the Rangers to be off, especially after the exploits of last night. Let's talk about that. Let's talk about the latest rumoruskies in the entire world of sports as we're off and running here, hour number one of the nation. General at your service. If you see me, bear me, N.A. There's Chief. Broadus is out today. You have Lucius Alexander, the Pimp Cup Master Control here, 75 and 635. Lakeside Studios fixing to go five flawless like it's nothing. Wolchuk's going to join us a little bit later on in the broadcast. Aiden Butler's coordinating your video. You can watch us online, and please do download that Odyssey app. It's the ultimate Tolo backup. And riding shotgun here with us, a little KNC overtime. It's Kevin Hagelin.
Woo! Now, y'all's guys have helped me out a lot. Most recently, it's spring training when I couldn't talk. So I was like, you know what? I would like to jump in on a little bit of extra G-bag.
Well, we appreciate you, man. Always good to see you, especially on a massive day like this. Maybe the biggest storyline since lunch is Adam Schefter is saying the Packers will have to be considering Micah on PUP to start the year. You guys see that?
Yeah.
Which would rule him. That's four games, right?
Yes.
If you're PUP to start the season.
Yes.
So, you know, I don't know when this Packers game is going to fall. Seems like Wolchuk feels like there's a pretty good chance it's after Thanksgiving.
Probably, but wouldn't you love to see it in week two or four now? And you're like, yeah, let's make that happen. And it makes sense timeline-wise, right? Considering when Micah got hurt, like,
yeah.
Feels like it was always going to be tough to have him back for the very start of the season.
Yeah, I would say so. You know, I just wonder how much the NFL has that in mind when they're putting this schedule together. Like, is there any way they would give you Micah in the first 4 to 6 weeks of the season?
I don't think so. But did you see the story from The Athletic talking about the AI component now that they use in building schedules in a way to maximize everything down to hotel prices and everything like that so the NFL can show their added value every single place that they go?
Wow.
So you got to think you drop that little tidbit in there, right? Like, Micah might not be ready in the first 4 weeks, and they're like, okay, move that Cowboys game somewhere else. But I would love it if it was two or four.
Man, if AI is to thank for this slate that we got on Thanksgiving and the week one slate, like, if AI is making it this much better, it might be the best AI use case yet.
I agree. How much do y'all love that they're like, hey, you're going to watch football anyway. Let's make every one of them rivalry day. You know,
yeah.
Like, you get Bears and Lions, you get Cowboys, Eagles, you get Bills and Chiefs, which has turned into like the ultimate competitive rivalry. That's a really cool slate.
Yeah, they're doing a hell of a job with this schedule. It might be the greatest schedule we've ever seen. You know, people are wrestling with, hey, how much do I care about this schedule release? And I get it. You know, in the end, it's a big nothing burger.
Right.
But every single day here on The Fan, we manufacture at least 20 segments talking Cowboys offseason.
So
I appreciate it.
I was thinking about this. I don't know if y'all do this exact same thing. This is always the way I say it. Tomorrow, one of the dumbest, most entertaining segments that we do, predict the Cowboys record.
The old win-loss.
Yeah, that's so stupid, but like, people love it.
I'm looking forward to it.
I know.
Can you give me a timestamp now?
11 o'clock.
Okay.
11 a.m.
Right after the Angel Reese trade discussion.
Shut up, Eric! Actually, this is your show. I'm going to shut up. You keep doing your thing.
Maybe you do it on our show. You know, maybe you've been saving it for the nation.
I might not get invited back.
469 asks, so the schedule makers are purposely screwing the Cowboys to make their schedule harder? No, I would say they're purposely scheduling matchups that will generate the best TV ratings.
For sure, because that game is not Packers-Cowboys. It's Micah Parsons against the Cowboys. So if you take out that key component, like, that's a neat game. But if it's Micah against the Cowboys, that's a different level of game.
Yeah, and I would imagine they're going to do everything in their power to schedule this thing
100%.
In a way that they at least can assume that Micah will be ready and available. And as much as, like, in one sense, you don't want that. You're like, I don't want to have to see Micah Parsons. It's a more winnable game. without him on the field. But then there's also a part of you that's like, no, I that's part of the love of sports, like revenge game, who's going to best who in that particular scenario. I'm excited about that.
Yeah, right now, I'm excited about that matchup, but if you told me you could play the Packers without Micah Parsons, your chances of victory go up significantly.
Yes, for sure. And Terrence Steele and Tyler Guyton right now are literally holding hands and crossing fingers and waiting for that to drop, and it'd be like a week two matchup versus the Packers.
I mean, I felt like you knew how good Micah Parsons was when he was on the Cowboys, but when he's on the other team, the fear factor really gets in a visceral way into yourself.
Well, and how awesome would it be if you got no Micah from the Packers and hopefully early Giants still trying to work out the kinks for that week one game? You're like, all right.
Yes. Well, not only that, and I think the reason the line is moving is the Malik Nabers knee.
Yes.
Forced a level of insider investigation into, okay, what is the deal with Malik Nabers? And a number of reports today have suggested, including David Chow, the former pro football doctor, that they were already expecting him to miss week one.
Oh.
Because of the injury and the timeline. So this second knee surgery probably doesn't push back his return very much because it was just scar tissue. It was more comfort and range of motion. And once you get that cleaned up, things return to normal fairly quickly. But it's the bigger recovery from the torn knee ligament that I guess was already putting him in jeopardy for week one. And you know, nobody's going to root for injuries on this show ever again after the death threats we got from San Francisco. But so they are crazy. Part of the game. And right now, if you look at the New York Giants wide receiver core, they're probably looking at Malachi Fields, the rookie from Notre Dame, and saying, what can you give us?
Yeah.
You know, because they lack juice.
I accept that deal.
They have, I guess, Darius Slayton and Calvin Austin, Darnell Mooney.
Yeah, Mooney.
They lost Robinson, who got the Cowboys.
Yeah, Wandale. He was a thorn in our side
a little bit. Slayton, every time I think he's ready to really take off, he's like, never mind. So I don't know about that.
Yeah, yeah. And I think week one's looking good. Week one's looking good right now.
Put it in the dub category?
Walchuk already did. I think Walchuk already guaranteed it.
Hey,
yeah, right. He's as crotch first as he's ever been. He knows they're winning one game next season.
Love it.
Yeah, and you know, the Giants draft is very interesting. I mean, not only the top two picks, but they also got Colton Hood.
Yep.
And then, as I mentioned,
I like
Fields.
Colton Hood.
So they got four players who could be something, and it could be the draft class that finally turns them around, but I wouldn't bet on that happening week one.
Not week one. You're Colton Hood. You're like, wow, I get CeeDee Lamb and George Pickens to start off my career? Fan-freaking-tastic.
Exactly. And I think you'll see a Harbaugh bump from them, but hopefully not straight away.
Okay, what else do we got cooking here in this world of sports? Salute to the Texas Rangers for pulling it off. Bottom of the ninth last night. You're sitting there like, good Lord, I'm tortured. So, you know, since the World Series, we can't have nice things here. I thought we were supposed to have a good bullpen. There goes Jacob Latz.
I know.
I'm just going to give all of it away after we sung Jacob's praises on the channel yesterday more
rightfully
than we ever
so.
Have.
Yeah. Do you think Seawald's going to have nightmares about playing the Rangers forever? Because remember, he gave it up in game one of the World Series, and now in a somewhat similar situation, he falls apart as well. Although, then the reliever who replaced him pitched one pitch and then lost the game. So I was like, good job.
He's probably glad that it wasn't him, but he does know that he gets a little yipsy when the Rangers are there.
Can I give you a ridiculous fact of the day?
I would love it.
The Texas Rangers went down 2+ runs in the ninth inning in the last two seasons. They were 1-67. Now they're 2-67. Both of those wins against Arizona.
Wow. And if you go back to 2023, game one of the World Series, they hadn't won. So this is the last 3 years?
Yeah. So they had beaten Arizona in a separate situation just like this, even after the World Series.
Even after the World Series.
Yeah,
okay.
The worst place Arizona can be in is having a nice lead against the Rangers in the ninth inning. You're like, you're
so hold on. We've done this three times since the World Series.
Correct.
And they've all been, that's significant. And that's why Broadus actually took Walchuk out of the globe before the ninth inning game one of the 2023 World Series. Maybe the most infamous act in G-Bag Nation lore.
Alternate history question. Butterfly effect. Somehow if they stay, do we not get those home runs?
I think there's a chance, dude.
Do you really?
I think there's a chance. There was something about their presence in that building. And Broad is probably mother bleeping these guys, getting frustrated with the way the game was going at the time. And then just getting some of that negative energy out. And Broadus has said, like, I'm used to listening to Eric Nadel call these games. And good things happen when I'm listening to Eric Nadel. And he got in his car. Bang! There's the dong.
By the way, Eric Nadel, birthday benefit bash, Longhorn Ballroom tonight.
Tonight.
If you're interested, can I please give you one more factoid for the Rangers? They've scored 23 runs in the ninth inning this season. That is the second most runs they've scored in any inning. They're only surpassed by the third inning. So take that for what you will. Maybe winding up the back part of the lineup, getting back to the top of the lineup again. But yeah, their second most prolific offensive inning this year is the ninth inning.
So I'm hearing they're pretty clutch.
Yes. Now, they're awful in the first inning. But, you know, they're good other innings.
Yeah, well, that first can get away
from us.
30
to 15, they're outscored in the first inning.
Oh, they are they're off tonight. They'll be back in action tomorrow against the Houston Astros, who did finally get off the snide last night. They beat the Mariners, but they are a team struggling big time. And hopefully the Rangers can continue those struggles because they're going to face them twice over the next couple of weeks, one down there and one back up here, I believe, next weekend.
And so you got to take advantage of that, right? Because not only do you get them twice, you've also got the Rockies mixed in. They're terrible. Yeah. Your next, I think, 12 games are against teams that are all just
10 games under at the quarter pole.
Yeah.
You got to be bad to do that. And hopefully the Rangers can take advantage and have this be the turnaround moment.
Absolutely.
As you're getting through the skin of your teeth, it would be apropos if it happened against the ninth inning against the D-backs.
See? And also, we live in a world where right now, if the season ended, the White Sox would be in the playoffs.
That's something.
Okay. Isn't it?
That's amazing, dude. All right. Ohtani pitched last night. He had a great start, but he didn't hit. And I thought this was a good time to talk about the Ohtani-Seager comparison, okay?
Oh!
He's going to take off today amid a batting slump.
Correct.
Are we looking for a Corey Seager day off here coming up before too long? In his first 10 games this month, Ohtani accumulated just 3 hits and a double in 36 ABs. Very similar numbers to Corey Seager. Half of his batted balls have been grounders, very similar to Corey Seager. Toward the end, he chased often, which has happened with Corey Seager. And he is about to turn 32, just 3 months after Seags did.
Has he struck out in an at-bat that he didn't know was over yet, like Corey Seager, too?
That was a rough look last night.
It really was.
And then the error, it was like he was just, I don't know, he wasn't there last night. Mentally, like, he just wasn't there.
Schumacher wouldn't confirm it with us yesterday, but my bet would be no Seager tomorrow. Like, when you talk about that day off, because he's off today because they're just off, I would bet he does not play tomorrow. And if he did, it would only be like in a late clutch pinch hit situation. But it is fascinating. I'm more inclined to think Ohtani will be okay because I'm really, really worried about Seager. I don't know what the show's individual say. I really am.
I was surprised to see Ohtani is already 32 years old.
Right?
I guess you got to spend quite a bit of time over there, so your compass or your whatever, your gauge for how old a guy must be based on how long you remember him being in the big leagues, it's a little bit off with the Japanese guys. But yeah, he is 32 years old, and that's when it kind of can happen. You know, by the time you're 35, if you were just an all-star, you're no longer an all-star. And if you were a Hall of Fame-level player, you're probably just an all-star.
No, I think you're spot on about that. Can I ask you guys a question about that?
Yeah.
I talked to a couple of people in the Dodgers organization, one of them I used to manage here, and one of the things they talked about was that Shohei Ohtani was dead set on wanting to win a Cy Young. Do you think like that, I'm not saying singular focus, but that majority focus could also be what's impacting his struggles at the plate?
I could see it. You know, I think what I'm thinking is around this age,
sure,
for the first time in your life, father time's like, hey, you can't swing out of your shoes and barrel that thing up anymore.
Right.
Your reflexes, your quickness, it's all coming back to earth a little bit. Here comes father time. What's the correction you're going to make? Jock Peterson at 34, 35?
Right.
He's got to be so safe that he's just walking and hitting singles and gives you the rare home run when it just all comes together.
Yeah.
You know, you don't want to go there.
I still don't.
Got a slug.
And, like, that's the thing about Corey Seager, right? If you're concerned about that, how many times have you seen him leg out a single or try to score from second on a single? You're like,
Yeah.
How many days is that going to cost us?
Yeah, no question. You hold your breath.
You got another seg in you, Higgs?
Let's do it.
All right, let's roll. We got the champ on the other side. We got Woolchuk's top 10. Chief filling in for his broadcast responsibilities. Wooly Bully's going to be here before too long, Chief. Where are you taking us in the meantime?
Let's go ahead and celebrate National Buttermilk Biscuit Day all together as a nation next year on the
BetMGM, official partner of Major League Baseball, is bringing the heat all season long. Step up to the plate all season with Swing for the Fences, the free-to-play game where every swing could score you rewards. We're talking parlay boost tokens, odds boost tokens, same game parlay boost, and even bonus spins all season long. And the action doesn't stop there. Get more out of every at bat with MLB same game parlay boost. Stack your picks and boost your potential payout. Plus, lock in bigger value with MLB odds boost tokens and MLB parlay boost tokens all season long. More boosts, more swings, more chances to win. Download the BetMGM app and step up to the plate today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 Plus and present in Ohio. Existing customer offer. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards pay back and unrestricted withdrawable funds. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. In partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Drink up, baby. Fantasy Football Happy Hour is here to get you wins and have some laughs. Matthew Berry here, and my podcast, Fantasy Football Happy Hour, has the sleepers, busts, and starts and advice you need to win your league. We're diving into the tape, we're crunching the numbers to bring you sleepers, busts, weekly start sit advice. Whether you're defending a title or desperately avoiding last place, I've got you covered every single weekday. The bar is open. It's Fantasy Football Happy Hour with Matthew Berry, wherever you get your podcasts.
Fan.
All right, welcome back. It is the G-Bag Nation here on 105.3 The Fan, plus Hagee. Kevin Hagelin, KNC Masterpiece, sitting in with us.
This is one of my all-time favorite bands. Freaking love Rage Against the Machine.
Yeah, me too, dude.
Bulls on Parade, second album, good stuff.
We got the champ, we got the top 10, we got a college football darty coming up. Segment's brought to you by the Frankels. If you've been injured in a car truck wreck, call the Frankels first, 214 or 817-333-3333. There's never an out-of-pocket cost. They only get paid when you win. The Frankels, the go-to car and truck wreck attorneys in Dallas. Top 10 here in just a minute. Here's Lucius with your champ.
Come with it now! Come with it now! Some of those to run forces are the same that burn crosses.
Yeah, I love that dude, bro. Oh, my God.
Let's go.
Oh, my
man.
God.
Karaoke night.
Fan album.
We gotta make this happen.
Yeah. Some riot music. Okay, so going for two today at 5:30 is this clip right here. We have a young man doing wheelies on his mini bike. Anybody ever here had a mini bike before? A mini motorcycle?
No.
I used to beg and plead my dad.
Too.
Dad, please.
Constantly.
Dad, please. I'll do anything. I promise. Yeah. I'm a gaze.
Can
I clean
get
my
a
room. Daddy, I clean my room every day.
Yep.
Just begging.
Just lying your balls off, too.
Just doing it. I wash the car on the weekend, Daddy. I promise. It's a mini bike, please.
My parents were too scared. My brother got a motor scooter when he was in, like, sixth grade, and the only way he could ride it around the neighborhood is if he was in his entire football uniform. Helmet, shoulder pads, pants in the pads,
what?
Soccer shin guards on.
Gosh.
Like, that's how stressed out they were. There was no chance I was getting one.
Pops didn't want me to get the motorcycle bug.
Yeah. Oh.
Even though he has mad bikes, he didn't want me to get the motorcycle bug.
Yeah.
How about that? All right, so this young man was doing wheelies in a empty park a lot in the neighborhood. Looks like it's right by the clubhouse, and some people were upset at this, so they came out and confronted him.
What does that say right there? No motorized vehicles.
On the grass.
Yep. Have your dad call me. What's going on? Honestly, you're not supposed to be doing it.
I'm not a child.
Okay? You're not supposed to be doing it.
Okay.
Like
call the police. I don't know.
What?
Call the police. I don't know.
Maybe I will. What's your name?
Don't worry about it.
Oh, don't worry about it. That's a funny name.
Yeah.
How old are you?
Don't worry about it.
How old are you?
Why do you want to know?
Let's go.
Because you shouldn't be doing this.
It's
nobody's here. I'm not. I don't understand. I don't understand how this affects you.
They don't like it.
Nobody likes it.
Okay.
I know.
We have to pay insurance on this crap, okay?
I'm not destroying anything.
It's not that. It's if you fall and crack your head open.
I'm wearing a helmet.
Oh, you got a helmet on.
Okay. I'm wearing protective gear. I'm riding a mini bike.
Don't do it in an area.
Find a track and practice.
Where?
Something useful. Wheelies aren't going to do shit. Learn how to drive.
Oh, you got a helmet on.
It's a community.
Okay, real quick, two things. Did that dad kind of S all over the helmet industry when he's like, oh, what's that going to do?
Yes.
And did you picture that lady as having kind of the moo-moo with the rolling pin when she was pointing at him and stuff when she was yelling at him?
Probably a gin and tonic in one hand. Yeah. Too much lipstick on.
Yeah. The old deal curlers in her hair.
Yeah.
Definitely has glasses. She's got the bag over the curlers too, right?
Yeah.
To help keep them in place.
Yeah, she's got a robe on still.
It's a community.
The insurance claims are the best, too. That's when you know you're beat.
I know.
Well, it could end up costing us because if you hurt yourself, you know what? Forget about it.
I was asking helpful questions. Go to a track. Where?
I did see a kid doing wheelies in a parking lot once. I was holding the soccer practice. This kid's doing wheelies, and he's like, you could tell he just got a motorcycle, and he's seeing what it can do.
Yeah.
And he laid that thing down so hard. We heard it go womp, womp, and then and right as I look over, he's like doing unintentional cartwheels.
Oh yeah, the semi-flips.
Yes. Yeah, I was like, oh, my goodness. So I ran over there. His phone was broken, so I let him call his mom. His mom comes up there in hysterics. I would be very terrified to the point about your dad. I would be terrified if my kid was on a motorcycle.
Yeah, he probably sold that bike after that. Yeah. After that situation.
Yeah.
Probably on Facebook Marketplace right now. Got a few dents, but you know.
If at first you don't
miles.
Succeed.
Yeah. Did you guys see the video of the motorcycle that was in an accident recently?
Yes.
It was stuck up on the lights, the street lights?
Yeah, that was cool.
It's like, I mean,
I'm gunning now.
Dude, you need to check this out.
Yeah.
He did survive. Okay, because I didn't know anything about it other than just seeing a clip of a motorcycle stuck on the streetlights at an intersection.
Yeah, he ran into some kind of vehicle. His bike went, but it flew him like 30 feet in the air, and then he got snagged by his belt or something on the streetlight.
Wow.
Yeah, he was good.
Gosh.
Yeah, they just had to have a fire engine come get him down.
I just saw the bike stuck up there. It was ridiculous.
Oh, that's a different one. No, I saw the dude up there.
Oh, you saw the... Oh, my gosh.
So the dude was caught by his belt loop, saved his life.
That's the luckiest thing I've ever heard.
Yeah.
Wow.
All right, we got Woolchuk's top 10 at 220. Here is Eric Chiafalo.
He's about to have a mega church after this one.
Oh, 100%,
God is
bro.
Real.
Yeah, dude. All right, happy National Buttermilk Biscuit Day to those who celebrate.
Maybe the best breakfast bread?
Ooh, is it? It's, I mean, I guess because French toast is kind of its own...
That's an entree. That's a breakfast entree.
Okay, there you go. Thank you. Yeah.
Sorry, I also got caught up watching the video. So what I'm assuming happened is the motorcycle went off the car because that silver car's hood is crushed in. So it had to have, like, flown off that to get
and
up.
Bounced
in the,
up into the...
That's your fault for making me watch that video.
No, I mean, it's an crazy. Insane video.
Yeah.
And the fact that it didn't fall down, I mean, think about the
amazing.
Wreckage that would have happened if it didn't get stuck up there. Another car is getting smashed.
Also,
probably
you know
through
where
the
it
windshield.
Was? It was at a mall. The street name is Mall Entrance.
Oh, my God.
So this
gosh.
Happened, like, right in front of a mall.
Yeah, that was crazy, dude. Okay, 877-881-1053. We have the top 10 chain restaurant biscuits. Now, this is from a gentleman named, or a lady, excuse me, Marcy Wynn. And she is writing for Ever After in the Woods, a website that Woolchuk has sent me saying, hey, it's biscuit day. Here's your list. So I said, yes, sir. Here we go. She has ranked these. Number 10 is a bad biscuit. This isn't like, oh, you made the top 10 and you should be proud of yourself.
Okay.
This is number 10 sucks, number 5 is decent, and number 1 is awesome.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so that's how this particular list is going to go. Do you have a place in mind when you think about biscuits?
Absolutely.
Okay, where is that?
Red Lobster.
Okay, 100%.
Now that might
the
be a cheater biscuit.
No, it's
I
on
know
the list.
That's not,
it's on the list.
I dated a girl once, and she made some of those, and I was like, I need to marry this girl. And she goes, oh, it just comes in a box.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I was like,
do.
Oh,
yeah.
You really undercut one of your
out
high
of the
points
frozen
right
frozen
here.
Section.
Yeah.
They are legit,
so glad
though.
You said that.
Yeah. I was like, oh, and I'm out.
You know, I think chain-wise, like, it's hard to get it wrong, you know? Even the
dryness. Some of them get dry on
okay.
you.
Okay.
Shout out the Popeyes.
Yeah, the Popeyes can do that, even though this
you
lady,
can shut a dog up for 4 days and get my Popeye biscuit.
Have I ever told you about Colby and us at the Popeyes in Arizona? We went to get chicken, and like they go, hey, we're out of biscuits right now. And Colby was pissed. And he goes, would you like to wait until you make some more? And he's like, well, how long is that going to take? And they go, 15 or 20 minutes. I'm sitting in the passenger seat. I was like, all right, so we're not waiting. And he goes, yeah, all right, I'll wait. I was like, oh, okay.
That's a man who loves his Popeyes
he's
biscuits.
He's like, that's the reason I came here. So,
well, then he's going to appreciate this list because old Marson here appreciates the Popeye's biscuit. Lucius, any biscuits that stick out to you?
No, but churches have slept on.
Okay,
churches
right.
have slept on. It's real honey,
yeah,
buttery,
okay. A little sweet.
Yeah, looks like it's homemade type vibes.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
You can usually tell by looking at it pretty quickly. Is this going to be like how much effort did they put into this biscuit?
This might not be technically a biscuit. But those little mini biscuits on the chicken minis.
Oh, at Chick-fil-A?
Okay. I was going to ask about that because they're on
is
the
that
list
a yeast
here.
Roll?
That's like a different kind of, it's not okay. your traditional biscuit, but for this list, it qualifies.
Ooh.
And like, you can tell they paint the top in some type of glistening butter situation. They are
special.
Pretty good.
Yeah.
They are pretty dang good.
Because you're right. It's the appeal of the look that's going to like maybe tilt you 10% one way or another before you even eat it.
Absolutely.
You also have the full biscuit that you can get the breakfast sandwiches on at Chick-fil-A. Those are pretty good.
Yeah, that's true.
But I wouldn't call them, I wouldn't say it necessarily hits the standard, the Chick-fil-A standard of being better than how most people do it.
Right. All the emphasis is on the chicken. They're slacking on the actual biscuit itself.
Yep.
The chicken's doing all the heavy lifting.
Yeah.
214 Woody says if Church's chicken isn't number one on the list, it is flawed.
That's what I'm talking about, Woody, bro.
Woody's got respect. We have the 601, Carl's Jr. and Bojangles.
Ooh.
Okay.
I had Bojangles. I don't know the last time I went to Carl's Jr.
I don't think I ever have. It's the Hardee's. It's the Carl's Jr.
Yeah.
Those two, I think of them as one and the same. I don't know that they are at all, but I've never been to either one of them. Let's see here. The Red Lobster biscuits are getting a ton of love here on the text. And I do think it really pops that you can just go to the store and make them yourselves. Like people are probably eating the Cheddar Bay biscuits.
What percentage of people do you think get drawn to Red Lobster for those biscuits first and foremost?
I would think it's probably like 25 to 30%.
Ooh, that is a hefty
it's like,
number,
dude.
All right.
Those biscuits, because aren't they unlimited?
Good.
Isn't it just like they're just bringing them to you?
Yeah.
So I mean that's a selling point. Okay, so we get into the list here. The worst biscuit. Congratulations to Cracker Barrel. She describes them as dry disappointments. Okay. That is her least favorite.
Oh, in your face, country store.
She says, good grief. Who left these hockey pucks in the oven overnight? She was not a fan. At number nine, you have...
I do like Cracker Barrel, though, by the way. I do like that spot.
Yeah. I mean, they bring it pretty strong.
I'm surprised they're so bad.
I know.
I would assume they're killing it.
They're making rocking chairs and stuff. They don't have time to perfect everything.
Yeah, you got a whole flea market to manage.
They got time for all of it.
Sugar cane soda.
Do love that soda. You got the Wendy's Grease Bombs. Okay, that is the second worst of the biscuits.
I like their biscuits, though. I guess what I said about 5 minutes is going to hold for me because I think they're all probably pretty good still.
Yes, okay. So your bar.
And then what they do is they butter them. They're calling them grease bombs.
Yeah.
I call that perfection.
Yeah, no, I think the butter is such a necessity for any biscuit. Like, before I put a jelly on there, the butter goes first. Like, when you do biscuits and jelly, aren't you putting butter on it first?
Yeah.
100%. Yeah. Okay, the next biscuit here, at number eight, you have Burger King's Identity Crisis Biscuits. is how she phrases them. Flaky, yes. Actually a biscuit? Jury's still out.
Ouch.
This lady's in her bag on this, I will say. Like, she did put a lot of effort into it. At number 7 here, you have, and this, of course, is the fourth worst biscuit on the list, McDonald's middle-of-the-road offering, she says. Ooh. McDonald's biscuits are the definition of meh. Not terrible enough to complain about, not good enough to crave. The buttery crust deserves a golf clap at best.
I like it.
You fan, like fan it. Of that?
Yeah.
The old McDonald's?
Bacon, egg, and cheese biscuit?
Yeah.
Like, see, I go just sausage. Woke me up
and said, hey, we're getting these? I'd be like, yes, that's a win.
Was that ruined at all for you by the McGriddle? Or is that a not?
Yeah, okay. I don't do those. Yeah.
You don't do the McGriddles?
Mm-mm.
Fascinating.
Wait, isn't that weird. The pancake?
Yeah.
Oh, those are freaking incredible.
It's like an entire breakfast plate in a sandwich. You know,
it's a one-stop shop.
Yeah. That's, it's you funny literally that y'all just agree, sold it. But you're on opposite sides for the exact same reason. Chiavello's like, yeah, that's right.
That is exactly what it is. I think it's fantastic.
I can't have the maple syrup in there.
Really?
Yeah.
I love a maple syrup sausage bite with eggs and cheese. Let's go. At 5, your most mid biscuit is the KFC dense but decent attempt. Okay?
Mm. Yeah.
Colonel Sanders might know chicken, but his biscuit game needs some workshopping.
The outside of it just isn't right. The inside of the KFC biscuit is tremendous.
Well, it's what's on the inside that counts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not in this case. We have Bojangles cake-like contenders. Okay, so now you start getting into the ones where she's like, okay, these are solid. Okay. Mm-hmm. Bojangles, she's got some respect for.
Let's see if Babes pops up on here.
See, these are just the chains.
Okay.
So these are chain biscuits because, yes, when you talk about Babes biscuits, oh my gosh.
They're really
with the
good.
With the honey and the butter, like the sliders you can make, the fried chicken sliders.
Whoa.
It's insane.
That's
dude.
A good idea.
Yeah, it's so good. So Bojangles, she likes quite a bit. At, let's see here, we have the Red Lobster, legendary Cheddar Bay beauties. Not technically a breakfast biscuit, but who cares when they're this magnificent? Red Lobster's Cheddar Bay biscuits are the rock stars of the seafood world, upstaging even the actual lobster, she says.
Ooh.
So it sounds like she's going to Red Lobster for the biscuits.
Agreed.
Chick-fil-A's buttery breakfast champions. Now we get to the Chick-fil-A. She's a fan. Overachievers of the fast food world, she says. Consistently excellent without showing off. And she appreciates the structural integrity that deserves engineering awards.
That is an underrated part of the biscuit, is it not?
Yeah, is it going to fall apart on me with bite number one?
That's a great point.
And you can make any biscuit edible with the right sausage gravy.
For sure.
Yeah.
It's a cure-all.
You have at number 2, Hardee's Fresh Baked Flavor Bombs.
Wow.
Unsung heroes of breakfast, according to this lady. The Hardee's, I'm going to have to try them. Never been to Hardee's.
Yeah, this is a bucket list thing, I guess. Do we have it here? Do we have Hardee's here?
Yeah.
Okay.
We do, don't we?
Yeah.
You just, I couldn't tell you where. You know, I'd have either. To Google
That's
map
the problem,
that thing.
Right? Yeah. They exist.
But number one.
Do you ever sit there and do the math, like, how much is rent here? You know?
Yes.
Oh, my God.
How much are employee costs?
Yeah.
How are you selling $30,000 of breakfast sandwiches when I never see anybody at your drive thru?
I'm with you, man.
I
Shout
wonder.
Out to Burger King.
Parking lot's empty.
Thank you.
That's what I think.
Burger
sorry,
King
man.
Sucks.
That's what I think all the time.
Number
I'm
one,
sorry.
It's Popeyes, ladies and gentlemen. Congratulations.
Thank you, Chief. We got a college football darty coming up next. What's in store with that?
Well, the 24-team playoff is ruffling some feathers. And which team has the most expensive roster? 877-881-1053. That's next here. And
you've built a great podcast. The content's solid. The audience is growing. But the money, still not where it should be. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your podcast for free so you can keep doing your thing while our experienced sales team does their thing, finding advertisers and bringing in revenue. No fees, no stress, just real monetization. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and let us show you the money.
The Nation. Alrighty, welcome back. It is the G-Bag Nation here on 105.3 The Fan. Our countdown to the NFL schedule release continues. The fun underway at 7 o'clock, Fan After Dark with Fred and Blake, but the rumors keep flooding in. We'll be back on those in a little bit. Here's Chief with your college football
Yeah, man, Walchuk keeps sending me some updated stuff, so I'll hit it for you in the hodgepodge here in a couple of minutes. But how are we feeling about a potential 2014 playoff in college football? Nobody seems to like it. Right after this.
Looky here. Mr. Cold Turkey put a mini booze bottle in his headset.
I've never filmed any of you guys when you're using the bathroom, so I don't know what faces you make when you're doing that.
Special teams, fucking joke.
I want them never to say our name again!
Well, I don't get the rain man, Colt.
Don't get me started, love. I've had too much to drink.
Okay, that too much to drink line is ringing a little bit louder right now, as I discovered apparently part of the reason why Sark was calling out Ole Miss for the basket weaving stuff earlier this week, as Ole Miss has been kicked in the nuts plenty over the last 3 or 4 days, thanks to Kiffin and guys like Sark. Their head coach, Pete Golding, was at Alabama when Arch Manning's recruitment was going down. And so Nick Saban was still the coach there, and they were doing everything in their power to try and get Arch to Bama. And so one of the ways that they went about it, Pete Golding, who was, I guess, the main recruiter guy at that point for Alabama to get Arch there, he suggested, hey, be careful about going to Texas because, you know, Sark's got that drinking problem.
Oh, wow.
And that's well documented, right, about Sark from his USC days.
Yeah.
And so I think that is still eating at Sark, and he's looking to punch at particularly Pete Golding at every turn.
Yeah, you know, it's tough, but I think that negative recruiting, doesn't it venture into all sports? Like, if we would throw out, like, requests for these stories on text, you know, I'm very involved in the local soccer community, and right now is all the tryouts and all the commitments for the next year. And there are so many coaches on Facebook right now telling stories about the rumors other coaches are saying about them. Like,
wow.
It's
a dirty game.
Careers are on the line. Legacies are on the line. And I think, unfortunately, you know, a lot of coaches are willing to lie to kids and make up stuff in order to, you know, try to have a winning season or get what they can. I wish there was more integrity, but it doesn't surprise me there isn't.
No, not at all. Now, we have the potential 2014 college football playoff, right? The expansion was from 4 to 12. I think the 12's been fun.
Yeah,
now all
12
of a sudden,
is great.
Is it 16 or is it 14? Is it 16? Is it up to all the way to 24? Here was Paul Feinbaum on Get Up this morning with ESPN. He is firmly against it.
The right number is probably 4, but we have 12 and we're going to 16 or 24. 24 is the worst possibility, I think, in the history of this game. Why, Greeny? Because it is going to devalue, dilute, and perhaps destroy the greatest football season of them all, and that's the regular season in college football. The big games at the end of the season are going to be meaningless. This is not the NFL where you try to position for a wild card or a home field. There just simply aren't enough good teams, and I respect Jim Phillips. You introduced me to him, Greeny, a couple of years ago, and he's become a very good friend. But the fact that the ACC campaigned against Notre Dame by pushing Miami is just laughable, that now he's talking about Notre Dame being a championship-worthy team. They weren't a championship-worthy team. They lost two games, and they really didn't have that much of an argument. But the point is that television and all these other forces are driving it. This is about the Big Ten, and they're getting a lot of help. And the SEC is right to say, no, we don't want that. And by the way, the most important thing Jim Phillips said, if I can say this on ESPN, is that ESPN doesn't want it either, and right now they control the CFP.
Okay, so ESPN doesn't want the 24, and so I think that, you know, that is an important point.
That's
here.
Interesting. Too diluted?
Yeah, I think
Where's the risk for them?
Yeah, I mean, I guess maybe just the regular season games definitely become diluted. So how many regular season games are you airing on ESPN that people are like, it really doesn't matter who wins this because both these teams end up in the playoff when it's all said and done. And they're letting 24 teams in there.
And they've probably done a lot of research on scenarios. I think 24 is too many. I don't know why they went straight past 16. I would like to see how 16 would work. But the thing that jumps out to me is that how important it is that they have some sort of an element of a round one bye for the best team. So I think they're working to preserve, you know, the playability of it. But I think it's unnecessary fear. I don't think anything's going to go away with the regular season. I mean, the NFL regular season is fine. We love the games. We love fighting for playoff positioning. You love fighting for seeding, right? Like, one of the top four spots, you're going to get to play one of the bottom teams. There's value in that. Having home field advantage, if there's that. You know, there's other ways to engineer this. I think jumping from 12 to 24 just seems like greed. And, you know, and then on top of that, like, the element that we had a couple of years ago where the teams that had the buys weren't even making it beyond round two. Like, mm-hmm. I don't even know how much you want the buy as compared to the momentum.
Yeah, as opposed to just having that first game on your home field.
Yeah.
You know, because the teams that were getting the home field advantage in that first round, they were rocking and rolling, and you get to, you know, have your campus be on fire, more money, all that kind of stuff for you as a program, compared to, yeah, you get the bye week, and now things, you're just a little bit more sluggish. You've seen that play out firsthand. So it's interesting. I think the SEC is looking to, like, they want it to move to 16. That's where they kind of want to draw the line. The Big 12, Brett Yormark, the commissioner, they want 24. We like 24. We want 24. That's what he says. There's too many teams getting left out, and 24 teams provides the type of access that is warranted. So,
at 24, I'm convinced those teams really don't have a chance.
No.
At 12, the Power 5 teams have had chances.
You just saw. Yeah, you just saw Miami be able to go on a run.
Yep.
And
Ohio State the year before.
Yeah, yeah, they were not one of the super high seeds there. I think they were like an 8 seed or something. So yeah, I don't know. I think 24 is doing a little bit too much. But you make a pretty good point. Like, college football, the rabid nature of it, fans are still going to care about it. Those individual games, even if you know, hey, both these teams are going to make the playoffs. We're not fighting for the playoffs, but we're fighting for the seeding and things like that. I'm sure you could still make a case.
Winning the conference still has plenty of, you know, to it.
Yeah, plenty of lore.
You know, trying to imagine that the 24th best teams could go on that type of run after seeing what we just witnessed.
It's insane. It's insane to even consider. Even winning one game.
Yeah.
Like, no. it's just probably
staying within double digits is probably
right. Those spreads are three touchdown spreads. So yeah, I'm hoping that if they do any expansion, make it 16 and then just stop it there. Now, the most valuable rosters in college football, would you like to make a guess who in 2026 has spent the most for their roster?
Yeah, I mean, I'll throw out Ohio State. Seems like a pretty good guess.
Number three.
Okay.
Ohio State is number three at $43.5
million. Wow.
They have a $43.5 million roster, and they do not lead the country. I thought it was interesting. Texas Tech, big oil Texas Tech, they're at number nine.
Okay, so they still have room to grow.
36
with their budget.
0.3 million.
God, imagine the Longhorns and the Aggies are spending a massive bag on this. Is either one of them number one?
Texas is number one. Just shy of $48 million. Like, the pressure in Texas this year, it's always big. It's going to be monstrous. Like, potentially the final year of Arch. You've added so much in the portal, and they were disappointing as all hell last year.
Yeah.
And now all the boosters are going to be looking around. Sark, we gave you the most expensive roster in the country. You better go do some damage. And that damage better lead to at least an appearance in the Natty. Miami's number two, $44 million. And I think because of their playoff run, they were keeping so much money along their playoff run. Like, they were getting all sorts of bonuses, basically. And they got to keep all of it. It wasn't having to go rev share with the conference. So Miami, I think, got a nice jolt in the arm.
And they rolled that back into the budget.
They rolled that back into the budget.
Investing in the program, you love to see it.
Yeah, so Miami, $44 million. You have Ohio State, LSU, Oregon. Those are your top five. Texas, Miami, Ohio State, LSU, Oregon. Then you get Notre Dame. Then there's Texas A&M at seven, just shy of $40 million. Alabama, Texas Tech, Tennessee. Those are your most expensive teams. You have outside looking in on the top 10, Ole Miss, Georgia, USC, Oklahoma, and Michigan.
Thank you, Chief.
Yes, sir.
College football, Darty in the books here. It's the G-Bag Nation and the Fan. Look at this. 1 hour down already. We got a full five here for you today. We have an eye on NFL schedule rumors. The release party starting at 7 o'clock with the Fan After Dark. This is the tailgate show. Schedule release tailgate show here. It's the G-Bag Nation. What do we have next, Eric?
We got a sports hodgepodge. I will give you some of the Walchuk ideas for the schedule. He is updating it in real time for us. And apparently, the legendary interrupting nature of Brian Broaddus has gone on for generations. Next in the nation.
For years, Gone South has been a podcast about crime in the American South. But for our new season, we're widening the lens. Through deeply reported, narrative-driven stories, we're digging into the myths, scandals, and power structures that still shape the South, and, in a lot of ways, the country itself. Follow and listen to Gone South Season 5, an Odyssey podcast, available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your shows.